Mr. Thompson calls.
Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, can you name three Jewish holidays that have a direct relationship to nature?
Friday and carts it all away. 1,000 trucks just like it are converging on the bay.
Earth Day is on April 22nd, and since protecting the environment is such an important issue, we thought it would be interesting to find out about what aspects of Judaism are directly related to nature. So this week we're speaking with Shifra Goldstein of Chabad in Madrid about the very close relationship that Jewish holidays and other practices have with nature and the environment. Thank you for being with us again this week, Shifra. This week we're talking about nature, so could you tell us about Judaism and nature?
The most outstanding times that we see Judaism connected to nature is during our three major holidays, which are Passover in the spring, Sukkot in the fall, and Shavuot in the early summer. These holidays have always been connected to nature. Sukkot was the holiday of harvest, and as a matter of fact, that's the origin of our strudels that were traditional to make on Sukkot, because it used up the bounty of the harvest that was brought in. In Pesach, it's the springtime. It's the holiday of renewal, of spring cleaning, what we call spring cleaning, which we're cleaning out for chametz anyway, so we do our springtime cleaning then. It's a time when we go yeast-free for a week, which is a spring cleaning for the body. And there was a offering that they did of the barley at that time, during Pesach time, in the olden days, that was also to celebrate the harvest of the barley then. Shavuot was the holiday of celebrating the harvest of the wheat, and there was a special offering that they gave. They made bread out of it. They usually did not bring any bread in the Holy Temple of Yore, but once a year they did, and that was on Shavuot, where you brought bread to celebrate the harvest of the yeast. At the same time, we're, of course, celebrating spiritual things and historical things that happened to the Jewish people at the same time. But we, looking at the nature part of it, there's actually a paradox about, from Pesach and Sukkot. If Pesach is celebrating the spring and Sukkot is celebrating the fall, we should have built Sukkot in Pesach time, going out into the nature, and on Sukkot, we should have come into the house and made a whole big deal about the house, which is what we do on Pesach. In other words, it looks opposite to us.
Yeah, but if Sukkot is a harvest festival, then maybe it makes sense. Maybe it makes sense to build a little house that out in the fields where you're closer to whatever it is that you're harvesting.
Well, officially, by that time, you have brought the harvest in already. So, and that's the time when we go out. So there are supernatural overtones to the holidays that we have. And so we want to show that this is a holiday that we do because God told it to us, not only because it is connected to nature. And that's why we do some things that are just the opposite of what the natural tendency would be. That's why we go out in the Sukkot in the fall, and Pesach we're concentrated in the house.
Can you go a little bit more into each holiday and how it's related to nature separately? I mean, you just kind of gave us an overview. Can you delve a little bit more into each of these holidays, and if there's any other time of the year or any other relationship of Judaism to nature that's not specifically related to holidays?
Well, we see it in the names of the holiday in the Torah. Shavuot, for example, one of its names is called Chag HaBikurim. That's when we brought the first fruits, because besides the offering of the wheat with this with the bread that they brought there, people would bring the first fruits that they had saved up from when the fruit trees started giving out their fruits, and it was the holiday of beginning to bring first fruits to the Holy Temple. And so it was a very happy time. People made a whole big deal out of it and decorated the baskets that they brought the fruit in. And it was a time of thanksgiving for fruits. Sukkot is called Chag Ha'asif, which we said before, the holiday of ingathering, where we have gathered in the produce of the fields, and we are very happy that it has been, hopefully, a good year, and we're celebrating that with Thanksgiving and, as I said, with traditional foods. Every place where Jews lived had their traditional foods for different holidays in order to celebrate this bounty of the harvest. And Pesach is Chag HaChirut, the holiday of freedom, which Chinese medicine will tell you is the time of renewal and freedom from the whole dark, damp winter, whatever it is that the Chinese medicine talks about. So it's a time of renewal in every aspect. I mean, we just love Pesach because of the smells of the spring that are out in the air at the time. And we celebrate that. As a matter of fact, there is a mitzvah in the time, around the time of Pesach. It's actually not on Pesach. It's before Pesach, where we go out and we have a special blessing for the first blooming trees. And there's a blessing of where here in Madrid, there actually is a certain person who in his garden, his trees always blossom in Nisan, right before Passover, and the community goes to his garden and says that special blessing. So we celebrate that too. Yes, there is a blessing for everything, even for the Tsar. There are a lot of symbolism in fruits. For example, Tu Bishvat, that's the holiday of the seven species of fruits that the Torah has praised Israel with. And so wherever you live in the world, you'll try to get one of these seven species, plus a new fruit of the season, no matter what land it is. That's what we celebrate on Tu Bishvat. So the Sfardim have a whole Seder on Tu Bishvat where they have a representative of each of the seven species. Two of them are grains, wheat and barley, so they'll usually have a piece of cake or, you know, something made out of barley too. And then you have the pomegranate, the date, the olive, the fig, and the grape. So we celebrate that on Tu Bishvat. On Sukkot, we celebrate with four species of plants that we hold together because they are very symbolic of the different types of Jews and to show the putting together of every type of Jew. We are all one nation, and though we are very, very different, on Sukkot we want to show that we are all one. We have the lulav, which is tall and thin. We have the lulav is the palm branch. Then we have the arava, the myrtle, and the myrtle is the hadas. Then we have the arava, which is willow, and then we have the etrog, which is the citron. So, and each one of these, you have one that has smell and taste. You have another one that has just smell but not taste. You have another one that has no smell and no taste, and one that has taste but not smell. And this shows the different kinds of Jews that we have. Some learn Torah, some do mitzvah, some do both, some do none. And yet we are all one people, and we come together. Sukkot actually also in the sukkah shows us the unity of our people because everyone is invited into the sukkah. We are all the same under one roof. That's one of the symbolisms of the sukkah.
This reminds me of the story of the four children in Pesach in the Seder.
Also, yes. We never forget our differences. And yes, a half a year later, we are again remembering our differences, and we invite the smart son, the wicked son, the simple son, and even the one that doesn't even have any idea what's going on. So we invite them to the Seder on Pesach time, correct. We are always at different times of the year remembering that we are all one people, no matter how different we are one from the other.
What about other ways in which Judaism is related to nature that's not necessarily related to specific holidays?
We have a mitzvah that when the Jewish army comes to a city to fight, it is allowed to use the trees that are around that city to build ramparts or whatever it needs, but we are not allowed to cut down fruit trees for that reason. And from this branches off all of the different halachot and laws that we have not to waste something useful. All of that is part of Judaism and part of the halacha that when we have something useful, we are not allowed to waste it. All of our grandmothers were right in saying, don't throw it away, it still can be used, because that is actually part of the Jewish way of looking at things. You cannot cut down a fruit tree if it still can give its fruits, unless there's a question of life involved. Of course, we're not talking about extreme situations. And in that way, you should not throw away anything that still can be useful. And all this waste that's going on nowadays is really not a Jewish thing. To use and reuse is why we have invented the kishka, and delicious kishka, and many other Jewish foods that our Jewish grandmothers invented, so as not to waste a single piece of food, because it was bal tashchis. Anyone who knows Yiddish know that you can't do bal tashchis. It's a waste. You cannot throw away things that can still be useful.
Anything else that you can think of?
Since God put us here in this world, we are not a nation that sits on a mountain to meditate, removed from worldly things. We are instructed in the Torah to use everything that God planted in this world. Every natural thing that we find, we are instructed to use it in any way possible for our service of God. And that's why, until today, we use ink made out of natural ingredients, a feather, parchment for writing our holiest material on, for writing a Sefer Torah, mezuzah, tefillin. We are connected to nature, and so we try to use it for everything possible according to what the Torah tells us. For the holiday of Purim, it is a custom by Ashkenazi Jews to make homentashen. Some say that the origin of this is simply a German word which was montashen, which means pockets for mon. Mon is the Yiddish word for poppy seeds. I guess in certain countries it was very prolific and they had plenty of poppy seeds, and so they made something sweet out of it, and they made the three-cornered homentashen as montashen, which later evolved into becoming homentashen because of the association with homen from the Megillah. But that was, again, to use the nature of the fruits of your country, the foods of your country, in any aspect of Judaism that it was possible to incorporate it in. There is a prohibition in the Torah of mixing linen and wool in anything that you wear. This is one of the mitzvahs that we have, one of the commandments that we have that has no reason given for it, but there is a lot of symbolism there. And one of the symbolic reasons for it was that Cain and Hevel, the first two boys, the first two brothers, had differences in opinion about how the world should be used. Cain was an agriculturist, and he worked the land, and Hevel was a shepherd, and he worked with the animals. I don't know all the details of their differences of world outlook of how to use the world in the service of God, but there were fundamental differences in that, and some people say those differences are shown all through the history in that we do not mix wool, which is something that belonged to Hevel, because he was a shepherd, and linen, which is a plant which belonged to Cain. So we don't mix them. The interesting thing is that in the Holy Temple, which was spiritually on a higher plane than this world, the belts that the Kohanim wore did have a mixture of wool and linen. And I was telling Linda the story that I had heard by my Shabbos table of a lady who was getting headaches while she was doing her meditation on a woolen carpet, and later was told by the guru that since she was wearing a linen tunic while she was sitting on the woolen carpet, the friction of the wool and the linen was making her the headaches. And that had nothing to do with Judaism, but we were left open-mouthed seeing that it's part of our tradition.
Is it only wool and linen? I mean, what about wool and cotton, for example? Or leather and cotton?
All other mixtures are permitted. The only one that is prohibited is wool and linen. And there are actually shatnez laboratories. Shatnez is what it's called when you mix wool and linen. That's the prohibition. There are laboratories in places where a lot of Jews live to actually take a microscope, and they have different tests to test if this material or the lining of a material, or many times linings of a collar, if it has a mixture of wool and linen.
Well, thank you very much.
my pleasure, and I hope it's a little bit informative.
Smart cars all sending gases to the stars, there to form a seething cloud that hangs for 30 days.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSephirah.com.
I'll leave you now with Pete Seeger singing Garbage with words and music by Bill Steele. See you next week.
Mr. Thompson calls the waiter, orders steak and baked potato. He leaves the bone and gristle, and he never eats the skin. The busboy comes and takes it, with a cough contaminates it, puts it in a can with coffee grounds and sardine tins. And the truck comes by on Friday and carts it all away. 1,000 trucks just like it are converging on the bay. Oh, garbage, 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 garbage. We're filling up the seas with garbage, garbage, garbage. What will we do when there's no place left to put all the garbage? Mr. Thompson starts his Cadillac, winds it down the freeway track, leaving friends and neighbors in a hydrocarbon haze. He's joined by lots of smaller cars, all sending gases to the stars, there to form a seething cloud that hangs for 30 days. And the sun blinks down into it with an ultraviolet tongue, turns it into smog, then it settles in our lungs. Oh, garbage, 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 garbage. We're filling up the sky with garbage.
Garbage, garbage.
What will we do when there's nothing left to breathe but garbage?
Garbage, 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 garbage.
Getting home and taking off his shoes, he settles with the evening news while the kids do homework with a TV in one ear.
Garbage, garbage, garbage.
While Superman for the 1,000th time sells talking dolls and conquers crime, dutifully they learn the date of birth of Paul Revere. In the papers there's a piece about the mayor's middle name. He gets it read in time to watch the all-star bingo game. Oh,
garbage, 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 garbage.
We're filling up our minds with garbage.
Garbage.
What will we do when there's nothing left to read, and there's nothing left to need, and there's nothing left to watch, and there's nothing left to touch, and there's nothing left to walk upon, nothing left to talk upon, nothing left to see, and nothing left to be but
garbage.
In Mr. Thompson's factory, they're making plastic Christmas trees complete with silver tinsel and a geodesic stand. The plastic's mixed in giant vats from sun conglomeration that's been piped from deep within the earth or strip mined from the land. And if you question anything, they say, why don't you see? It's absolutely needed for the economy. Oh,
garbage, 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 garbage.
Their stocks and their bonds all garbage.
Garbage.
What will they do when their system goes to smash? There's no value to their cash. There's no money to be made, but there's a world to be repaid. Their kids will read in history books about financiers and other crooks, and feudalism and slavery, and nukes and all their knavery. To history's dustbin they're consigned, amended any other kinds of garbage.